If you're looking to get and stay athletic for life, this is your podcast. Hey guys, I'm your host, John Zombro, Coach Jay-Z, and I'm here with my amazing and wonderful co-host, my bro, my coach, my bro coach, my broach, PK.
Good morning, John. All right, thanks.
Things are great because what we do at the Lifetime Athlete Podcast is help everyone to maximize strength, speed, power, endurance, and agility on the way to being hard to kill, both on the playing field and in the game of life. Let's get it.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. High energy as we kick this things off. What's going on in your world?
Well, the high energy comes from the major hormesis that got on this morning.
Tell me, what'd you do?
Woke up from a good night's sleep, maybe better than I'd had in a while, and I was feeling it, man. And so I hit the infrared sauna, and then just outside at 15 below plus wind chill for a little snow bath. And man, woo, it was good.
That is insane. I'm a fan of the hormesis, and it's probably not 15 below where I'm at. But man, that is some commitment, but you feel energized.
Oh yeah, I'm so energized, in fact, that I think tomorrow morning or Saturday morning, it's forecast to be 20, 25 below. And when we hit that, I think I'm going to snag it and go out and build myself a snow throne. and it might show up on Instagram. It just might.
Wow. That is commitment. But that hormesis, it's the real deal. It really is legit.
Yeah, I had been spending, a lot of the winter just staying on the warm side of things, doing some good heat shock protein release, hitting some saunas here and there, and just, hot baths, hot showers, hot workouts even. Hadn't really felt the desire to have cold exposure or cold immersion since the fall. And wow, I hit it today. And I thought, oh, maybe you should not go so long in between doses, John boy.
Yeah, check back in on that minus 25 snow throne situation. talk to me about what we're doing today.
Well, everything seems to revolve around what happens with our training tribe. So if you're a new listener, you know that the training tribe is the Lifetime Athletes online group coaching and training platform. We are a team, get each other's backs, and get things done. So members of the tribe were asking me some questions, and then also some other listeners had chimed in to kind of discuss some topics which I thought were all quite legit and very interesting. And so I should probably segue into what we're up to with the tribe this week. We're coming off of a masterclass session last weekend where we did a coaching the deadlift. And so we looked, learned all things hinge pattern, and looked at how to approach the bar and set up and brace and compression strategies and all that great stuff. And I think the guys got quite a bit out of it, seeing their lifts go up just through technique. And then we're staging, we're going to do one of our workouts. We've got a push-pull leg split that we're using currently. And so workout C is a leg day. We're going to hit that on Saturday as a group, anybody who's going to be attending. And there's also going to be a coaching a session on the squat in there, because that's part of that workout. Howdy, Mo. And so that's cool stuff. But they'll ask sometimes, well, why do you have certain things in the pot or the programming? And I like to say, well, because I want you to be your best you, and this is how we do it. And so, first of all, anyone who's listening, if you dig that kind of vibe, and maybe never again want anybody to tell you that you don't know squat, join us, please. We'd love to have you. And it is, it's both fun and effective. Now, finally answering your question, PK, hopping, jumping, prehab, and mobility. I had a couple of listeners or audience members from different areas contact me and say, well, I want to learn about these things. I want to understand what's the difference between hopping and jumping, among others. What's this whole deal about prehab I hear people talking about? And also, how do you define mobility, because it's thrown around so much?
Yeah, that's good. I like that. I love it when we get actual questions from the audience. let's sort of set the groundwork for how they ask you these questions. How do they contact you, John?
Oh yeah, real quick. And I agree with you. I really appreciate their thoughtful queries because it gives meaning to these messages that we're trying to deliver. And anyone is welcome to hit us up. You can email me at contact@thelifetimeathlete.com. On Instagram, it's @thelifetimeathlete. On Twitter, I'm at @TLACoachJZ. LinkedIn is John Zombro, and YouTube is The Lifetime Athlete. So feel free to use any of those resources to perhaps see what we're up to, get something that might help you in your training, but also to contact us specifically. And as we've said before, if you have a lot of questions or a story to tell, and maybe would like to be on the show, just ask. We'd love to have you.
Yeah, and I always find that the application of the techniques, ideas, philosophies in real life scenarios with real people, as they're, you know, training towards something in most cases, so illuminating. So I just love that when that happens.
As do I.
Well, let's get into the first question. And this one, here's what we'll do. I'll ask the questions and then you jump off with the answers. This comes from Fit Chick Forever. It says, I'm confused. No, great handle there.
Awesome. Fit, yeah.
Forever. I'm confused, she says. I look at all kinds of articles and videos on various kinds of plyometrics, and some people use the words jump and hop interchangeably. Is there a consistent way to apply this terminology? So, great question.
Yes. The nomenclature of leaping. There actually is a lot of inconsistency here, but we can break it down. So, in the simplest of terms, it's all about the landing. You know, whether you're jumping or hopping, you know, let's say you can take off on 1 foot or two, but mostly jumps land on both feet simultaneously or 2 feet. And so when we're talking about jumping, if you're taking off 1 foot and landing on two, it's usually good to designate that as a single leg jump or SLJ, but you usually don't have to say double leg jump. It's mostly just assumed that it's going to be a 2-to-2 relationship.
Interesting. Okay. So you're saying that just kind of based on the intensity, the height, all those different factors, if you can land on one, it's a hop, but if you must land on two, it's a jump.
Yeah. And some of that just depends on what's the goal of the exercise and what the context is. But then to, be on the converse of that, hops land on the same foot as takeoff foot. So, if you're going left to left or right to right, that's technically a hop. So it's a 1-to-1.
Okay. Gotcha. I'm tracking.
Okay. So now we can get into some other terms. We've got skips and bounds and gallops. And so what all of those things do is they land on the opposite foot from what the takeoff foot was, although each is slightly different. So a skip actually has a second same foot contact before the opposite foot touches down, but each cycle begins on 1 foot and ends on another. So that's a skip. Now a bound is simply an exaggeration of the reciprocal gait pattern or the running technique with usually a little more hang time or extra distance between those opposing foot strikes. And so it'd be kind of, left, go through the air, right, go through the air, left, so forth. That's bounding. And then gallops, that's kind of a stick pony, get on your horsey kind of a move. And, you land front to back, but you don't cycle from side to side. In other words, there's no complete thigh switch when you're galloping. Mm. You're holding the front foot stays the front foot all the time. It doesn't alternate which one's front.
Interesting. Okay. So I got you there. So there's even more, I guess, sub jumps and hops in the category. There can be.
Yeah. And I think that all of these things relate to, like, you just watch kids on a playground. They automatically do all of those things because it's fun. And these are all natural movement patterns for the most part in the human. Just to go back and simplify, so let's just say with any kind of a jump, you land on 2 feet. And then hops.
Gotcha. Yep.
Hops are going to be single leg, same foot to same foot. So we get that out of the way. But now all these things are great to include in your training because they work on force production and management, elasticity, coordination, timing, even balance. So it's really essential programming to put in, and it's fun. So I try to put into my own, you know, personal programming and that which we do with a lot of the clients, one-on-one coaching, especially the training tribe. All year long, we've got something. And so, you know, when they're outdoors, you know, let's say programming has outdoor training exclusively May through August and then partially September through November, they're probably doing some form of drills, which might involve skips and bounds, for example. You know, we do a lot of that kind of stuff in power and speed development work. Then as we move into the winter and we're focusing more on agility, there's a lot of multi-directional change of direction work indoors, you know, small space, and that could be using plyometric steps and split steps and different kinds of things just to keep that whole you know, beastly function alive. And then of course now while we're really in the strength phase, but we're still doing you know, as part of our preparatory work every session or two, doing some amount of box jumps, depth drops, some things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and John, when you're sort of conveying or you're coaching, do you find that like videos are essential, especially if you're not like in the same room to really convey the proper technique and what you're doing, say contrasting a hop and a jump when plyometrics are involved?
100%. Yeah, absolutely. Like I think that's one of the reasons why we've got our platform set up the way that it is, because, you know, every week the members get the programming laid out for them, you know, table form, text form, but also they have the video that they can utilize as well. And then also in the master classes, we'll sometimes attack specific things to do. And so, yeah, I think that's really helpful when you're looking at motor learning, you know, to be able to see it and practice it. And I rarely put anything in that's overly complex because I just think your return on investment, it gets poor. But it's fun to have like a little bit of a challenge, get some mastery with movement, and then also get those benefits, particularly when, you know, we look at the viscoelastic properties of human tissue. So to explain that, that's a nice term, viscoelastic, but basically means that the tissues have the ability, you know, we're talking skin, bone, fascia, muscle, tendon, ligament, to either be viscous or be elastic. You know, it's a really cool biological trait. You know, we can swing a bit on a pendulum, depends on the tissue, of course, and the situation. But under low loads or slow loads, we have a slow rate of deformation in our tissue. So they can kind of dissipate force and stretch out. But also we have this unique gift that with a high load or a rapid introduction of force, the body can stay stiff, which is actually stiffness is the key to elasticity because that's energy return. So then we can bounce and spring and, you know, deliver high rates of force. And so modern life does fine with the viscous side of things because, you know, we sit at workstations and our tissues sort of start to form these gelatinous globs. But what we really need from our training is to, you know, frequently stimulate these elastic properties. And you can even get fancy looking at connective tissue and say, well, there are these special molecules in some of our tendons, for example, called proteoglycans, and they actually help the tissue to imbibe or hold water, and then that, you know, fullness gives it more of its potential for elasticity. So cool science there.
Wow. You use some great words, imbibe. What did you say? Actually, like, elasticity is the key to suppleness? What did you say? I should have written it down.
I don't even know if I said it, but elasticity really is that key to athletic movement and being able to, you know, exert force and to move your body quickly. You know, all those things require a transitory stiffness turned on. And so, you know, some of that is endemic to what happens when a muscle, if it contracts isometrically and what the tendon is doing, but also with this regular training, we can improve essentially how all the tissues, you know, have that quality, again, elastic component there, so they can turn on stiffness when they need it. And people who don't train eventually lose their elasticity. They, again, you know, they can be viscous, but they just don't have the elasticity that would benefit them.
Interesting. Yeah, the elastic turn on when you need it. I like that. Lots of absorb there. All right, John. I want to go on to the next question.
Okay.
And I think that you're going to be able to really sink your teeth into this baby. TJ asks, John, what exactly is prehab? See the term from time to time, and it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So what exactly is prehab?
Well, honestly, I think it's a cutesy term, and it's mainly just semantics. But having said that, you know, I would say, well, you know, you have this whole like idea of rehab or rehabilitation, which is kind of an, you know, intervention after the onset of bad things, you know. So once you're injured or you've had surgery, now you've got to rehabilitate. Okay, we all understand that model. But then the mindset of those who use the term prehab is like, oh, well, if we do certain things on a somewhat consistent or regular basis, we might actually be able to avoid the, you know, onset of that injury or dysfunctional problem.
Interesting. So it's not just for a sort of, you know, upcoming, let's say, surgery where you know enough in advance and you're prepping for it by working on your strength or flexibility or whatever before the event. You're just saying it also is sort of mixed in with general maintenance and just a capability.
Yeah, precisely. And I'm glad you brought that up because, yeah, like a pre-surgical or something along those lines, training or preparation, definitely there's a place for that. But I think the, you know, the people that are the promoters of the concept of prehab would say, no, prehab is really more like we just want to have these key things, basically the incorporation of exercises into your regular training routine, which address problem areas that may be vulnerable to injury, given your body's profile and sport, or keeping old pre-existing problems from resurfacing.
Interesting. You know what it brings to my mind? It's just when we look at professional athletes who suffer an injury, oftentimes their timetables to return are faster than us in the gen pop. And it's because they're just tuned in at such a high level before the injury.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the training state of most professional athletes is we're trying to get close to that as regular everyday folks, but you know, they certainly represent an extremely high level in most cases. But sure. You know, the thing I would say is that in reality, intelligent and optimal training will automatically address all the needs of the beast. So actually, we were talking about the elasticity and, you know, skipping, hopping, jumping, things like that. And I said that, well, a lot of times in our warm-up or preparatory phase of a workout where we're doing cueing, activation, working on mobility or specific skills, you know, that we're doing sort of things that might be classified as prehab, but we're not even thinking that way. We're just like, you know, trying to train optimally. So also, after we have the primary or main component of a workout, we have the accessory portion where you might work on a couple extra pet exercises for any number of reasons. So you'll hear terms like, oh, we're going to do some hamstring protection work, like doing some Nordic ham curls or single leg RDLs, things like that. You know, that can be viewed as prehab, but in reality, it's just smart program design.
Yeah. So it's kind of more like just a buzzword, it seems like.
Yeah. And here's where like I get into things, you know, because I'm animated and I sometimes do like to go deep. I like to actually have my athletes think of training as comprehensively developing the beast more than living in fear to avoid or prevent some kind of silly calamity. So, you know, if your bod or your training is off a bit, my suggestion would be get a coach and tune it up. If a person's in chronic prehab, it suggests an imbalance, and it almost, and I say this respectfully, but it almost borders on ignorance, at least in terms of program design. So we just don't want to waste time or not use the best method. So when we're training optimally, we don't have to think about prehab. And you know, an example comes to my mind is like foam rolling. You know, there's nothing wrong with a foam roller. I use it from time to time. It's a useful tool, but doing it once in a while is great. But if you need to do it for 40 minutes before you're ready to go, something's off, and a better program design can fix that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great example. Cause you could potentially think, well, this is just what I need to do. The foam roller example to get myself, warmed up for whatever's coming next. But I like what you just said. It's like, there's probably a better course of action. So you don't have to do that. Yeah, that's great. Great.
Yeah. And I know we're trying to get away from this question in a moment, but, you know, thanks TJ for asking that. First of all, it's excellent. Like what's going on with the tribe next week? They'll be in their intensification week next week. And so there's always a key performance indicator test. And right now in a couple of the major movements, they're establishing their 5 RMs, 5 rep max lift. And what I did with them is I said, well, really you want to adjust your training split. So, you know, if it was push, pull legs off. So that's 7 days. Maybe that week, assess how you feel recovery-wise. If you get up and you're, you know, fresh and bouncy, go ahead and feed the workout addiction. But if you really pushed it and you went to true failure, you know, so we're talking RPE 10 or RIR 0, give yourself a day off. You know, take a walk, take a sauna, yoga, whatever. Let yourself recover. And that's kind of that smart training design where if we just said, oh, just spend an extra 40 minutes on the foam roller to get ready to push yourself through probably a suboptimal or marginal workout. No, don't do that. And so that's where, you know, I like to be available that, you know, they communicate with me often in the forum that we have or shoot through emails. And it's really important to have somebody to kind of help you with that, but also let you know that it's okay to make those adjustments. It's, you know, never should programming be rigid.
Yeah. And I think that that's something that you certainly believe in, John, and advocate for on the show. I also know in your interactions with the tribe and your clients, but that isn't a sort of, in this scenario, you're not saying, hey, give yourself a pass. Like don't do the quote unquote work. What you're saying is, it's a better way to get to your end goal, to listen to the body and not have to just stay rigid to accomplish the goals. You're actually advocating sort of active rest in, I guess, a greater pursuit of the ultimate goal. So I think that there's a little misconception there where, you know, take an off day and that's a day to sort of not get your gains and you're just taking a pause. Well, you're actually saying it's going to be productive.
Totally, you know, work hard, but work smart, and gains of, you know, fitness gains, adaptation, super compensation. They're really it's training plus recovery. And so if you try to train before the recovery process is mostly completed, you know, you're just stacking, you know, insult and injury upon itself. And that's really, no.
That's no bueno. All right. One more question.
Yeah.
You ready for it?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Anita wants to know, John Boy. No, I actually put that in there. She just said, what's the difference between flexibility and mobility?
Well, this is a question which I hear frequently, and it's near and dear to my heart.
Why do you think you hear it so frequently these days?
I think there's a lot of talk out there, you know, wherever, you know, on social media, on the internet, in, you know, different training programs from authorities that will use these terms. And it almost goes back to like that, you know, what's the difference between a hop and a jump kind of thing. Flexibility and mobility are similar terms, but I think in optimized training, we want to view them slightly differently.
And like, so let's dive in.
Excuse me. I would say that flexibility, it's basically just joint range of motion. How far your limb or body can move is basically how flexible you are.
Right. And that makes sense. That actually is, that's pretty straightforward.
Yeah. And that's, you know, kind of goes back to physical therapy 101. You know, you're trained to put people on a table and raise their arm up or their leg and then take a, you know, a a goniometer, a little plastic, you know, protractor, and measure what the degrees of range of motion are, and you'd say that's their flexibility measurement. I don't entirely agree with all that to the greatest depth, but nonetheless, there it is. Now, how does mobility differ from flexibility? Well, mobility is the ability, you see where I'm going with this, to use that range of motion. So, like, right. And I like this term, you know, you say, okay, so you have this amount of flexibility, which we measured on the table, but do you own it? Can you access it in your movement patterns? You know, whereas flexibility is a fairly static assessment, mobility has this higher involvement and requirement of the central nervous system, again, to be complete.
I like that. I like that. So it's an application of the flexibility. That's great.
Mm-hmm. And now I get the chance to get really into what I think you thought I was going to do at the beginning, and that's get comprehensive. So, and Anita, if I've answered your question and you just want to split, okay, got it. But if you hang on, this might be interesting. So mobility is only one of four constituents of agility, which is an expression. So agility is an expression of animalistic excellence. And it's one of the big five, you know, the big five capacities of human performance. And those are strength, speed, power, endurance, and agility. So mobility combined now with stability, fluidity, and reactivity is the exemplification of the agile beast.
I like that. I like that. And I think that, I know you're going to go deeper, but before you do, I think the sort of the general, the thrust of Anita's question is, I'm seeing a lot of these terms out there used interchangeably, and perhaps even mobility is a sort of hot topic right now, where you might read some blog posts from people that aren't as studied or passionate in it. And so I think that, John, you've been really advocating for this in a very deep way for years and years and perhaps decades. And so I think that it's just out there in the conversation of the world that we're in, this word that I think perhaps is not used as passionately and as intelligently as you choose to use it.
Yeah, precisely. And it just comes from me thinking like, well, can you move? But then how do you move? And then what really are we trying to accomplish as high functioning beings, and certainly as athletes, is we want to be agile because it encompasses all of those things. And so, whereas mobility is the ability to move in a desired range, we've established that, stability is the ability to resist being moved in an undesirable manner.
Interesting. Yeah.
So if we have all mobility and no stability, you know, we do become kind of like a puddle on the floor or a gelatinous glop of you know, noodles or something like that, because you know, you've got to have stability with your mobility, you know, intermittently, interchangeably, in a, you know, a harmonic fashion to move optimally. So if we can stabilize our limbs and bodies as we move by aligning the skeleton, because you know, the skeleton will passively do a lot of that work, and then turning on and off muscles in like a pulsatile fashion. So muscles are just lighting up and contracting here and there to stabilize, but then they're allowing movement. So we're not driving with the brakes on. All of a sudden movement takes on a higher quality. Again, when you mix mobility with stability.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that you've nailed it right there, because, you know, like the flexibility is, I guess, kind of an impartial, maybe just something you can do, but applying it is really where mobility comes in. Okay, great. Move on to the next one.
Yep. And I would say that I've seen a lot of flexible people who were poor movers. And so that's, you know, that's why we're having this discussion, I think, in some ways. Now, if you've got your mobility and you've got your stability, and we know we're building the foundation of agility, the next thing you have to add in is fluidity. So fluidity is that next level movement quality, and it's that graceful flowing presence, which the most artistic and poetic movers exhibit. So instead of a robotic, herky-jerky thing, you know, fluid movers are seamless in their excellence. They present really what the opposite of what I sometimes call ugly movement syndrome. And that's kind of always, you know, joking saying that, but it makes, when you watch somebody who moves with fluidity, It makes an onlooker say, it's just a beautiful thing to witness. And we've all done that.
Oh yeah. And you know, when you see it in people, you see it in certainly athletes, regardless of the sport, you see it in nature. When you just see a graceful, fluid animal roaming around, and you know it when you're not looking at it as well.
So true. I mean, I love that example of the natural world, you know, like the hawk soaring on the thermals and the aspen, you know, flexing in the breeze. It's just, wow, man, they're so fluid, and they've obviously it's built into all of us naturally, but this doggone modern world where we're sitting around getting too viscous is messing with our fluidity. So we want to keep the movement going.
Getting too viscous. That's an article right there. We're sitting around getting too viscous.
Wow. Yep.
Talk to me about the final component of agility then, John.
Oh yes. And so that's, life does not exist in a bubble. So we have to have reactivity, and that's the final component of agility. The questions we say to ourselves is, can you do all those aforementioned things like move and stabilize and connect with that fluidity while reacting to your environment and adjusting your outputs for optimal outcomes? And so life, and especially sport, doesn't happen in a flat, silent world. The agile athlete adjusts effectively. So motor programming is dynamic. And so finally, you know, I kind of went from flexible to mobile to all these other things. Now you're agile, and that is the ultimate goal.
Yeah, and I think that it is the ultimate goal, especially if you're, whether or not it's stated, certainly I know it is for you when you've got a good coach like you, Jay-Z, but it is sort of maybe this unstated goal that should be bubbled to the surface.
Yeah, so maybe even taking it into like the training realm, there's a place for stretching. There's a place for everything. I think we have to acknowledge that. But stretching alone won't get all this done. And so where stretching seems to work the best is if you go all the way back to that range of motion or flexibility. If you have a deficit, stretching's a very appropriate intervention to apply there. But once you get that requisite range of motion, now all of a sudden our movement training has to incorporate all the other components of agility to be truly effective and, again, optimize the function and performance of the magnificent human beast.
You got it. Well said.
Ah, man, all year, I mean, we have been on fire with these shows. It doesn't matter whether I drink coffee, tea, or water. Word count is up. I know you're telling me, go, man, but I'm feeling it.
Word count is up, yeah. Well, I mean, with you, when you're getting the hormesis and you spend 3 minutes giving yourself a little snow bath, then I just can't expect you to be anything other than energized.
Yeah, I'm almost powerless to fight that because the surge.
Why would you fight it?
Yeah, you wouldn't. No, you just go. And so I guess I want to say, BK, you're the man. I love you. Thank you for being with me doing this thing. Thank you, listener. You are fantastic. If you haven't yet and would consider giving us a rating, hopefully with 5 stars, and a review wherever you listen to the show, that's really helpful because it gets this message out to more and more people who could potentially benefit from it. Likewise, if you can share with someone that you care about who really wants to be a lifetime athlete, please do, and thank you. Reach out to us with more questions. We talked about how to do that at the beginning of the show, and if you need more mojo in your program, you want a fun, effective, inexpensive option, T2 might be for you. And if you're laser-focused, I was talking to a guy about being laser-focused yesterday on a big goal, like a sport thing, a PR, you've got your body comp, you're trying to get rid of a nagging injury, once and for all, one-on-one coaching with me might be for you. So Coach Jay-Z signing off, and all I can really say is stay hard to kill.
Adios, everyone.